My name is Lawrence Tuning. These are my 88 friends.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one-man band. I'm their number one fan. Me and my 88. Me and my 88 friends.
The name of this show is called Me and My 88 Friends, and it's a reference to the piano. I am a piano player, a songwriter, a singer, if you want to call it that, let's say a communicator, and a preacher. And so I've had this great love affair with the piano my whole life. In fact, I can't remember a time when I didn't know how to climb up on a stool and pick out a song or a tune with one finger. So when I was asked to do this program, I thought that's what I want to name it, Me and My 88 Friends. This is an hour of music, mainly of songs that I've written over the years, and of stories and of celebrating the joy of being a Jesus follower. And so I'm glad that you're joining with me. This is coming from Florence, South Carolina, but the radio station is out of Indiana, where I lived for a number of years. So let's just talk a minute about the show and about the piano, the 88 friends. There's 88 keys. The piano is an amazing instrument. They called it the pianoforte, which meant soft, loud, or soft, strong. But who wants to write that long word out, pianoforte? So they shortened it up to piano. What it meant was, this is an instrument where you can play softly or loudly. The other keyboard instruments, like the harpsichord, had the same volume. So pianoforte has been my friend for many years. I've played some of the most awful pianos in America. The worst was in the Vermont State Prison. You can imagine what quality they had there. In a prison, but I used to be at the mercy of everybody's piano anywhere I sang. I didn't have an electronic piano. I remember one time we were singing in Indiana at a storefront, a coffee house, and we were waiting on the piano to arrive. Well, it arrived all right, but it arrived in really bad shape. I guess somebody put it on the back of a pickup truck, and as they turned the corner, the entire piano smashed into the highway. And so I have to try to play a piano that is now totally out of tune. There was another place in Massachusetts where we drove up and we started laughing at the piano hammers were sitting on the sidewalk in the pouring rain, in an absolute downpour of rain. And we said, who in the world would do that? Then we walk in and they say, that's the piano that you've got to play tonight. So, even though I've played some bad ones, I've played some nice ones too, and I still love that instrument. When I was 20 years old, I was visiting my parents in South Carolina, where I grew up, where I live now again. I had been going to college in Anderson, Indiana, Anderson College at the time. It's now Anderson University. And I was riding in my car and praying, talking to the Lord, which is what prayer is, and just beginning to tell the Lord how much I wish I could write songs, but I couldn't do it. I couldn't come up with original tunes. And I remember saying to the Lord, if you would just give me the gift of writing songs, I want to give you my promise that for the rest of my life, they will all be about you in some way. This was something I could not do. I had tried and tried. You know, after that prayer, within a week, I had my first original tune, and I've been writing. That was in 1969, by the way, so you can kind of tell how old I am when I tell you I was 20 years old at the time. And since that day, I've written probably several hundred songs, some definitely worse or better than others, but I've tried to be true to my promise that I gave him, that if he would do this for me, they would always be about him in some way. Now, not all the songs talk about Jesus from the very start. There are many, write about many things. Like I've got a song about the Boston Red Sox. I've got a song about Kalamazoo, Michigan. But sooner or later, they end up pointing toward the Lord. I tell people that all of my songs get saved on the third verse. So I wrote this little song that's now our theme song for this show, which is called Me and My 88 Friends. The song is called Me and My 88 Friends. And I went into a studio a few weeks ago, and we put it down and put a drum to it. So I want you to hear the whole song now. And by the third verse, it will point to Jesus. So here it is, Me and My 88 Friends, sung by yours truly.
Me and my 88 friends, me and my 88 friends, I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one-man band, I'm their number one fan. Me and my 88, me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends, me and my 88 friends. Some are black, some are white, they are precious in my sight. Some are quiet, some are loud, some stand out in a crowd. Me and my 88, me and my 88 friends. We've been friends for a long, long time. Since I was old enough to climb up on a piano stool and get to know them one by one. Me and my 88 friends, me and my 88 friends. Some are black, some are white, they are precious in my sight. Some are high, some are low, re mi fa sol la ti do. Yeah, me and my 88, me and my 88. To give the glory to the King of Kings, he's the one who gave the harmony. Oh, come, let us adore him. Me and my 88, me and my 88, I love my 88, me and my 88 friends.
My song, Me and My 88 Friends. I thought I'd sit down at my keyboard and sing you a little song live. This is called If I Didn't Know Jesus. If I didn't know Jesus, I'd be one miserable man. I didn't know Jesus, I'd be one miserable man. I'd be no better than a beggar with a tin cup in his hand. If I didn't know Jesus, paranoid would be my middle name.
shoulder, trembling and ashamed. Jesus, there would be hell to pay. I didn't know Jesus, there would be hell to pay. Here's the good news, but Jesus paid it all and he sent me on my way. Oh, if I didn't know Jesus, I'd be one miserable man.
When I told the Lord that if he would give me the gift of writing songs, they would all be about him. The one thing I didn't tell him is that I didn't tell him what style they were going to be in. So I've left those options open. I have a pastor friend who lives here in Florence, South Carolina, where I live, who has called me the Baskin-Robbins songwriter, because he said you have so many flavors. But I do like to play the little bluesy style like I just did. But I've written a lot of songs over the years. Probably the most well-known song that I've written is a song called The Anchor Holds, which Ray Bolts made popular a decade or two ago. It's been recorded by many people all over the country. We will talk about that song at some broadcast, but I've written a lot of different styles of songs. I'm going to tell you just a little bit about myself. I was brought up on a farm in South Carolina. My dad was a cotton farmer, and he owned a little store and a cotton gin. How more southern can you get than that? Your father was a cotton farmer and owned a cotton gin, and so that was sort of my background. I come from a long line of ministers. My great-grandfather, who has the same name as me, was a minister. I had three uncles and one aunt who were ordained ministers, and so I grew up in the Bible Belt around cotton fields, going to a little country church. And when I was 8 years old, I asked the Lord into my heart, whatever term you want to use, born again, got saved, received Christ, accepted Christ, became a Christian. There's all these terms, but basically I asked the Lord to have a relationship with me. And in my own way, I gave him my life. And I remember I was a few years before that, I sort of wanted to go forward. We had a church where you went forward to the altar. And I asked my mama if I could go, and she said, no, not unless you feel God's calling you. But then she later told me, if you ever feel God wants you to later on, do it. So I did it. I was 8 years old, a very simple Wednesday night service. But it changed my life forever. Well, many years later, I was 8 years old when it happened. And after I had become an adult, moved away, moved to Indiana, then to Massachusetts, I came home to visit my parents there on the farm and decided I was taking me a little walk up to see my favorite aunt. She was 3 miles up the road, and about 2 miles up the road, I saw the little church where it all happened. I had the scare of my life about 2 minutes before I saw the church. I passed a home. I knew the people there. And all of a sudden, I see two ferocious Great Dane dogs were coming straight at me. I almost had a heart attack. I was calling out to God, help me, God. And all of a sudden, they just stopped right dead in front of me. And there for a minute, I thought, wow, this is like Daniel and the lion's den. God just stopped the dogs. Then the lady came out who I knew. She says, oh, this is what we call an underground fence. So it wasn't my faith that stopped the dogs. But anyway, after that, I went two doors down and I saw the church out in the country. I saw the cemetery where my relatives are buried. And as I kept walking and looking at that little church, my mind was flooded with that memorable night in my life when I became a follower of Jesus. And I started formulating as I walked, this little song started formulating. It's called The Night That Changed My Life. And it took me 40-something years to record it, but I recorded it about 2 or 3 years ago on my latest CD. The CD is called Living in the Shadow. And the name of this song is The Night That Changed My Life. No, I never wrote down the day, but I can take you to the spot where the Lord reached down from heaven and he came into my heart. I believe it was early summer. I was still a child when I heard Jesus call me, and I walked down the aisle. My mother knelt beside me. I remember it to this day. She put her arm around me and she began to pray. Then my tears started falling, for I was praying too. Then she asked, do you feel better now? And I smiled and I said, I do.
changed my life. The night that changed my life.
That song was called The Night That Changed My Life. And it was a life-changing night for an 8-year-old kid. People come to Jesus in many different ways, many circumstances. I was fortunate to have come as a little boy, and I was also fortunate to understand what some people take years to grasp, and that is that Jesus Christ, the Son of God, truly loved me and truly was interested in whatever concerns I had. I always knew that he could be my closest friend, and that's how I approached it at 8 years old. I just wanted to have a best friend. And I have walked through every portion of my life, basically, as a child, as a teenager, a single adult, married, youth, middle age, and now getting a Social Security payment every month. And he is interested in every part of our lives. And if you don't know that, I just hope you will learn how truly important you are to him and how truly he loves you and cares for you. I heard a story one time, and I want to just tell you this, about a dog. Now, I just told you about dogs a few minutes ago, but there's a story that illustrates just sort of the way I feel. There was a dog in a little town, and a rabbit ran by, and the dog saw it and started chasing it, barking and running. Well, that stirred up a lot of dogs in the neighborhood. The next door dog started chasing the rabbit, got behind the first dog. Pretty soon you've got 10, 15 dogs running down the road all together. Well, little by little, most of the dogs lost interest, just went a little ways and turned around home. But pretty soon, the only one left was that first dog, and that dog never stopped. And somebody was commenting about it and said, well, what was the difference? Why did the first one keep running and all the rest stop? And someone said, well, the first dog actually saw the rabbit. The other dogs were just following because of the leader. But the first one had a glimpse of the rabbit. And for that reason, he never wanted to stop. That's the way I feel about Jesus Christ. I saw him as the friend he could be as a little boy. And I've never looked back. I never wanted to do anything else but run after him. And I'm grateful that he's given me that desire. And this is just a wonderful opportunity now for me to have this radio program. I thank Gary Wright and all the people here at the station who allow me to do this. Like I said, I was born on a cotton farm, and I lived there till I was 18, and then I moved to Indiana, went to Anderson University in Anderson, Indiana, lived there for 10 years, moved to Massachusetts, stayed there for about 16 years, and then came back to South Carolina in 1994. For 2 years, I lived across the field from my mother. She had a rental house, and so we lived there. And so that farmhouse, we had a cotton field to the left of me and a cotton field across the road from me and a forest on the other side. And cotton was always in my blood. When I moved to Massachusetts, when it came October, I could smell cotton lint. I could be walking down the streets of Boston, Massachusetts, and I could smell that cotton lint. Just, it was a nostalgic time of year. So when I first moved back to the farmhouse across from my mom, I got a job as a foster care worker, and each morning before I drove the 17 miles into work, I would go out on my front porch with a cup of coffee and read my Bible. And one day I happened to be reading the book of John, chapter 4, when Jesus said, "Do not say that in 4 months will come the harvest, but look around you right now. The fields are ripe for harvest." Well, the King James Version says the fields are white for harvest. And I read that verse. And of course, we know that the harvest in Jesus' mind was people, harvesting people who will go to heaven and who will live forever, reaching into the fields and calling people to follow the Lord. It's a harvest field. So I thought about that, and I thought about the fields being white for harvest, and I looked and I saw those white cotton fields, and my father had just died a couple of years before that, and I thought of his great love for the fields, and so I wrote this song and recorded it many years ago, but it's called The Season of the Harvest. I was brought up in the Southland with clay beneath my toes. The fields were white with harvest that my daddy used to grow. Through the misty haze of autumn days, the cotton shined like snow. The season of the harvest, so many years ago. They would plant the seed in the springtime, watch the soil each day. They would pray for rain and sunshine, trusting all the way. There were years of disappointment, but the joy would always show. The fields were white with harvest my daddy used to grow. One day out in the distance, I could hear the Son of Man. He called me to his side, showed me through the land. He showed me fields of plenty. He said the laborers are few, and it's the season of the harvest. It's work for all to do. Every tribe and every nation, every race and tongue, I can see them by the millions. One by one they come, and I can hear sound of laughter from those who used to weep, for
It's the season of the harvest, season of the harvest. Oh, it's the season of the harvest, with shouts of joy we reap. Season of the harvest. When I was 18 years old, I moved to Indiana to go to college. That was quite a culture shock to move from the cotton fields of South Carolina to Indiana, and then later to Massachusetts. I've been in three different kinds of cultures, but I loved my time in Indiana, and so thankful this radio station is from Indiana. I'm thankful for my friend Gary Wright. I will talk about this more later on in another episode, but in my junior year of college, Gary Wright, the director of Global Renewal Ministries and this radio station, came with a team of students from Asbury College in Kentucky and shared about a powerful revival, an awakening that had happened on their campus. And to make a long story a little bit shorter, which we will make longer later on, we had a tremendous awakening in our city of Anderson. This was in February 1970, which ended up having three services a day for 50 days. My life was totally revolutionized by that. Even though I was following the Lord, I was already a follower of Jesus. I had an experience of just a total commitment to do His will from that revival. Over a period of time, a team was formed to go out and into the streets and wherever the doors would open to tell people about the Lord. It eventually became a music group called The Fishermen, and I started writing songs, and we started singing my songs and other songs. And we couldn't afford a big silver bus, but we could afford a 1959 hearse. And so I wrote this song. I want to play it from my latest recording about that experience. It just kind of tells the story of the early days. It's called Trying to Obey the Call.
Let's go back to where it all began. Me and my friends back in Indiana form a three-piece band, bass, drums, and piano, that's all. We didn't sound half bad, we didn't sound red hot, but we prayed real hard and we practiced a lot. We were singing for Jesus, trying to obey the call. In the streets, some people called us Jesus freaks, and I have to admit we were caught up in it all. The songs got better and our hair grew long, and the Jesus movement kept coming on strong, and all the while we were trying to obey the law. We would ride into town in the afternoon, set up the equipment and get in tune, then we'd gather in a circle and pray for the fire. Help us tonight as we sing these songs with all our might. If we reach one person, Lord, it's worth it all.
This all happened many years ago, and they still don't play me on the radio. And the crowds I draw run medium or small. But I got no regrets for the life I chose. I'm a happy man and I hope it shows. Been a great ride trying to obey the call. It's a good life trying to obey the call.
Earlier when I sang the song about the cotton fields, the fields ripe for harvest, I think it's verse 35 of John 4 where Jesus says, the one who sows and the one who reaps rejoice together. And he's talking about reaching out and bringing people into the kingdom of God, bringing people to follow Jesus and live forever. I know what it's like to harvest, but many of us just so. We don't see the fruit for many years. Sometimes we wonder, was it even worth it? I know many pastors who are very discouraged. They think, what am I doing? But you have no idea the fruit that you are bearing that may show up many years later. My worst night of ministry ever was when the Fishermen, my music group, was asked to come to a little church in Indiana. I will not name the town in Indiana because many of you listeners live in Indiana. But let's put it this way. The bank in that town still has the bullet holes for when John Dillinger robbed the bank many years ago. That's all I'm going to say now. But we went to this church. It was a mainline church, a prominent church there in town. The pastor was just a great guy, and he had experienced personal revival too, and he could see the passion that we had to talk about and sing about Jesus. So he asked us to come to his church. Well, all I can say is the pastor loved us, but the people were not impressed. They didn't like the way we looked. Our hair was long, we wore jeans, and we did a very sacrilegious thing to bring a set of drums into the church that was unheard of. And they just didn't like us, and we had to be there 3 nights. And the first night was just like pulling teeth, and stony faces, just glares, all of that. And so we tried to sing our songs, sang two or three songs, no response whatsoever. It was like singing to a brick wall. And so finally I looked at my bandmates and I said, I'm going to preach now. Maybe the word will stir something up. And so I opened my text to preach the word, and I didn't get the verse even out of my mouth before, let me just say, it was in the summertime and the doors were open. I don't think the church had air conditioning anyway, they weren't using it, and the back door was open. So before I even got the verse out, I looked and a bat, B-A-T, bat, flew into the congregation. A bat out of hell. That's exactly what that bat was, in my opinion. And so he's zooming around, and now the people don't have stony faces. They've got all their attention on the bat, and they're putting their hands over their head. I think somebody took a coat off and was kind of, I don't know what he was doing, swinging it around his head. I don't know if he was trying to lasso it or what. It was very bizarre. And I just thought, what's going on? And this is the honest truth. I had learned a little bit about spiritual warfare, but I didn't know much. But in this little voice, I was barely like 22 years old, maybe 23 at tops. I say in this little faltering voice, I didn't know what to do. I said, in the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, I command you, bat, to stop it. Stop it right now. And incredibly, the bat flew to a beam there, in the ceiling, and folded his little wings and listened to the sermon. The only creature in the building listening to me at that point. Well, nothing happened. We still didn't go over well. We gave an invitation for people to come forward and accept Christ. Nothing happened. And I remember thinking, this is the worst night of my entire ministry. It'll never get worse than this. And I remember thinking, let's just look at the next place we're going. We'll just write this off as a loss. This was a waste. And I felt that way for a long time. Well, 12 years later, after I had moved away from Indiana to Massachusetts, I was asked to come speak at a church in Anderson, Indiana. And it was a great night. The song leader was very exuberant and happy and passionate and sang well. And when it was all over, the song leader came to me and he said, Lawrence, I want to ask you a question. He said, do you remember singing in, oh, I almost said the town. Oh, my goodness. It almost slipped out. It starts with an M. But anyway, he said, do you remember being in that town and a bat flew in? And I said, yes. I've tried to forget that night for many years. That was just a disaster, the whole service. And this guy, this song leader, said to me, he said, well, Lawrence, I need to tell you something that might change your perspective on it. Do you remember that nobody came forward to the altar when you asked if anybody wanted to pray? I said, I remember nothing happened that night other than a bat flying around. He said, well, I want to tell you, I was a teenager. I was there. And I went home. And in my bedroom that night, I began to think about everything you had said. And I knelt by my bed that night, and I asked Jesus into my heart, and I've been walking with him for 12 years. And I just want to thank you that you came. Even with a bat flying around, I became a Christian later that very night. So that was an experience where I was sowing. I didn't know I had reaped. Didn't know for 12 years that we had reaped that night. And so if you're out there and you're just kind of feeling down, you feel like, what can I do? I want to just sing you a little chorus that was written in the 1800s by a man named Ira Sankey, who was the music man with the great evangelist Dwight L. Moody. And I want to close this 88 Friends time with this song. Lord, lay some soul upon my heart. Love that soul through me. May I ever do my part win that soul to thee. One more time. Or lay some soul upon my heart and love that soul through me. Thank you for listening to me this last hour. I hope you'll come back. We're going to be here every week. It's called Me and My 88 Friends. My name is Lawrence Tuning. See you next week.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one man.